From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's time for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. The Minnow Bucket, for all your hunting, fishing, and outdoor needs. Stop in today at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's your host of Husker Radio's Outdoor Connection, Rick Windham.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection, the Stump the Chump edition of the Outdoor Connection. I have TJ Harding with the Minnow Bucket here, and we're going to be talking about the outdoors. If you got a question related to anything, hunting, camping, fishing, whatever, call it in, and then we'll talk about a few other items as well. Good morning, TJ. How you
doing? Doing well. Thanks for having me in again, guys.
Welcome back to the great United States.
Yeah, you bet. I was a foreign diplomat there for a while.
Yeah, he just got back from Canada, had a chance to go up and do some hunting, and you did quite well. Congratulations.
Man, it was, thank you. I appreciate that. I know it was really, really a heck of a trip. You know, they advertise it as a moose hunt, you know, so that's what we were aiming for was moose. But once we get up there, we realize it's an any species tag. And I'd never heard of anything like that. And it's a native land hunt, you know, First Nations okay. ground up on the reservation ground in southwest Saskatchewan. But, you know, I was talking to the outfitter, and he said, you know, there's only other one place in the world that has a situation like this where it's pretty much you buy a tag and shoot whatever you want. And he said, and that's South Africa. He said, This is the only place in North America where you buy a tag. And on the back, it had a list of species. It was moose, elk, mule deer, whitetail, barren ground caribou, mountain caribou, woodland caribou.
Wow.
Bison, wolf, black bear was on there. I mean, just all this pronghorn was on there. All these different species. And he said, you pick what you want to shoot, and we'll shoot it. And then if you want to shoot a second animal, it's, you know, an additional charge.
A little bit more, That's not a bad deal.
Oh, man, it was cool. You know, and we focused on the moose first, you know, and then... Like I showed you my pictures, the moose was cool. You know, I did get a nice bull moose.
It wasn't the 90-incher I was hoping for.
No, he's about a 36-incher.
I should qualify that statement by saying where you were and right. the subspecies you're hunting, that's as big as it gets.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things that they kind of advertise it as a Canadian moose hunt, but the one that both of the bulls that we shot, me and Bob Meyer, Bob went with me too, and we both shot Shire's moose,
right.
is what they were.
Yep.
And I didn't even know there's Shire's moose up there. I said, it's about probably 60% Canadian moose, 40% Shire's. But I didn't get to see any big Canadian moose. Bob and his guide did. They just couldn't close the deal. And they said there's two of them that were 50-plus big old bookers with the big old
broadlines
and chasing cows down the hillside. But
it just fascinates me that those big Canadians or the Yukon subspecies mm-hmm. can even walk through the timber much head gear.
It's unbelievable. You know, and you're around here, we're trained to look for deer. We're trained to look for a white rump patch. We're trained to look for an ear or a flicker of a tail or something like that. When you're moose hunting, you're looking for horses. you're looking for horses standing out there in the fields. But no, it was pretty cool. And then, so I went ahead and harvested that moose on the fourth morning and, you know, got pictures taken, got him loaded up and hauled back to camp. And the outfitter said, well, you got a day left to hunt. Do you want to try to get a second animal? I said, yeah, absolutely. I brought the extra money. Let's go do it. And so the next evening, the very last evening, we were in, actually, they call it the sand hills. I would call it a deal. It's not like the big dunes like we got up north here. They're small. But more rolly.
I could tell that from some of the pictures that you showed me there.
And that's their mule deer area. You know, so they asked me, what do you want? And I said, I want either a big white tail or a big mule deer. You hear all these stories about these Saskatchewan deer. I want to get a Saskatchewan. Paid you more money, or would you have been happy with this animal? And they said, no, that's a good one. You know, not everybody gets a chance
the
at a
picture,
deer like that.
The picture that you sent me, I'm looking at it. And you're a pretty good-sized guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was
kind of thinking. That deer kind of fills up the picture.
I tell you what, man, you know, I've been around a lot of deer. You know, I've been very blessed throughout my life to have been around a lot of really nice deer, big deer, big bodies, big racks, whatever. But I have never seen anything deer-wise that even comes remotely close to the body size of that mule deer that I shot.
Did anybody weigh him? Do you have an idea what he dressed out?
They guessed, shooting from the hip, that his live weight was north of 350.
I'd say it's just
incredible. You know, and like from a taxidermy standpoint, they measure. There's two measurements when you talk to your taxidermist to get the form measurement. You get the eye to the nose. Nose was the neck right behind 7 3/4. You know, and that's about common around here for his 5-6-year-old buck. 7 3/4. You know, and that's about common around here for his 5-6-year-old buck. Big neck measurement around here is like 22 to 24. I mean, that's huge. That's big.
Is he 36?
28.
So. Because he's kind of got that Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And when we first saw him, he had his head down. You could just see him just standing there. I said, that's not a 2-point. And then he picked his head up, and everybody kind of started going crazy. So.
Yeah. You did well. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. We had a great time, and I'm already looking forward to maybe booking one for next year.
So. Uh-huh. Now you're spoiled. Well, wait till the taxidermy bill comes back.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm going to get that. Mule deer is definitely getting a shoulder mount, and then I'm just going to do a horn mount on the moose. Figure maybe someday I'll shoot a bigger one. So
full European or just horn?
Just horn. Okay. Because to get back across the border, you can't have the brains in because of CWD.
Ah.
So we would have had to completely finish the European mount up there. And there's a guy there at camp that did it, but he charged $300 and, you know, everything cost a little extra and whatever else.
Right.
But we just skull capped him, and then I actually helped him boil the skull caps. That way we didn't have to do like full Europeans on them.
Right.
So
in today's world, they make, if you just have a horn mount, mm-hmm. for deer, whatever, they make plastic skulls that you can mount them to them.
Oh, yeah.
With a little bit of putty and paint,
yep.
You can make it look like a European.
Make it look like a European, absolutely. I haven't seen one for a moose, but I know they do it for deer. I'm sure they probably have a moose one.
I'm sure they do somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, just fill the gaps in with clay or putty, like you said, and make them look however you want.
So, very good.
Yeah.
Now, you being an experienced hunter, I know you didn't take one rifle.
No, I didn't. I took a couple of them. Yep, I take two. It doesn't matter if I'm hunting across the canyon from the house. I've usually got at least two rifles with me. You never know what's going
to
happen. But
I've always said that, and I actually had it happen to me one time. I was out in Wyoming on an antelope hunt, and I broke a firing pin.
Yeah.
And if I had not had my backup rifle with me, I'd have been done.
Yeah. Now I took my I've got a 358 Norma mag, and took that for my number one, and then I took my 35 Whalen, which is kind of my old standby. Even here, you know, it's one of them guns that I look at and like grab it more often than I do some of the others. So, but after the third day not having any luck, I thought, well, maybe if we change sweatshirts and change contact lenses and change caps and change guns, and we'll see what happens. Then by golly, I shot that moose with my Whalen. It was probably a 150-yard shot. He's looking at us, and we couldn't get him to turn. We finally turned his head, and I put it kind of at the point of the shoulder where the neck joins the chest, and he did the old curve whop. You know, you should hear that bullet hit a moose.
Oh, right.
Holy smoke. 225-grain Accubond hitting a 1,400-pound animal makes a lot of noise.
You're a big thump.
Yeah, but he did the rear-up deal, and then he turned, and he said, pump one more into him just for good measure. So I did, and he didn't go anyway. He just stumbled around and then went down. So I actually recovered one of the bullets. I meant to grab it and bring it over here for you. From that first shot going into him, it was just on the backside by his diaphragm, and I weighed it when we got home, and it was 199.6 when it started out at 225, so I didn't figure that was too bad.
Didn't lose a lot.
No, perfect mushroom, perfect performance from that Accubond. Then the mule deer.
See, that's another thing you can tell a real rifleman, real shooter. When we're down to measuring the weight of the
measuring the weight of the bullet after it passed through the animal,
because it interests us. We want to know how the bullet performs.
Yep, and you couldn't ask for better performance. The mule deer, he was probably a 200-yard shot, and I put the old high shoulder on him because he's on the edge of some real thick stuff. I didn't want him going anywhere, so I put the old high shoulder on him and curve-whopped him. And those guys, the guides that were with me, they just couldn't believe the shooting, you know, and I'm just like, that's just pretty normal stuff, man. They said, you'd be amazed at what we see, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people get excited and miss at 50 yards.
I've
guns aren't sighted in. Oh, this been bore sighted. We should be good to go. They get all kinds of stuff. So they were happy to be with somebody that could
bore sighted means it'll get in the same county.
Yeah. It'll hit a minute. I always called it a minute of feed sack at 50 yards.
I like that. And I tell people, I said, sighting in your rifle is not throwing yourself across the hood of your pickup and shooting cow pies across.
Before you done, you know, the forms we needed and everything else.
Talk a little bit about that, because getting a weapon in and out of Canada can be an ordeal.
It is, you know, and if you kind of know what to do, it makes things a lot easier. To get across into Canada, you have to have a form. Excuse me, you have to have a 4457, I think is what it is. It's a U.S. ATF form, kind of like a 4473,
yeah.
You know, that you fill out for gun paperwork. But all that form does, you're claiming your guns and your optics, anything that's high-end, you're claiming that. So then when you come back, if they search through anything, they said, well, what's this? I said, well, that's part of my claimed deal.
Yeah.
So you had to have that, and you do that right there at the border, which was nice. Then you get across on the Canadian side, and there's a separate Canadian form, and you've got to write your make and your model, type of action, caliber, you know, and stuff like that, what optics are on it. And then they look at them, and it's like $25 to cross into Canada per person with firearms. But I mean, it took 2 minutes. You know, it really wasn't bad. And we crossed at a pretty small crossing. You know, it wasn't a big, busy 6-lane deal. You know, their closest town was 45 miles away on either side of the border. So we were kind of out in the middle of nowhere. They're probably just happy to see somebody other than themselves. But and then on the way back. Coming from Canada back into the U.S., you don't have to pull into the Canadian side. You just go straight to the U.S. side. And so I had all this stuff, you know, our passports and we had meat export papers that we got from the tribal council signed by the chief and everything saying these animals were harvested on our property, you know, and legal to transport across the U.S. They didn't even look at anything. I mean, they said we need your passports and asked if we had any animals. Said, yeah, we had three and... They said, well, I guess see those export papers, and I'll be right back. And, heck, it was 2 minutes later, come out, have a safe trip home,
guys. That's good.
He never asked to look in the trailers or look for our gun papers or nothing. So it really was an easy, easy crossing.
That's good. Last time I went across the Canadian border, they had a couple new border guards there, and they were trying to do...
Make a name for themselves.
Damn, it's almost dismantled the vehicles. It was like 4 hours to get there.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like... You know, I just sit over here and watch you guys do your thing, man. It's
yeah.
So, anyway, I hear some music in the background, so that means Tristan says we got to do a commercial. So stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
Calling all hunters, young and old, novice or pro. The Minnow Bucket of North Platte has all the specialty hunting items you want and need this fall, including rifle and archery, arrows and ammo, scent killer, drags and decoys. Don't forget scopes and rangefinders. Ask TJ about custom reloading, scope mounting, and rifle sighting. Coming soon, 2-week European mount turnaround times. Wow! Buy from a professional and find it all under one roof. Stop by the Minnow Bucket, 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Then go hunt.
We see them out in the field working hard in the day. We see their lights in the field at night, knowing they don't stop until the harvest is complete. Acres Equipment and Subway are making it possible for those harvesters to be fed. And here's how. When you see them in the field, snap a picture and upload it to HuskerRadio.com. If your picture wins that week, Husker Radio will take Subway to the field. It's that simple. Put your phones on camera and get ready for Pick a Harvester. Brought to you by Sutherland Sportsman's Co., Remax Home Farm and Ranch, and Agland in Broken Bow.
Hey, it's Dave Ramsey inviting you to tune into the Dave Ramsey Show on News Talk 1240 KODY. Our show provides common sense advice that works. We call it God's and Grandma's ways of handling money. Tune in for a proven plan that's worked for millions of Americans for 25 years on the air. It's the Dave Ramsey Show, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. right here on News Talk 1240 KODY.
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. Mostly sunny skies here for today with a high in the mid-60s, northwest winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low near 36. By Saturday, sunshine and breezy, high 63 degrees. Sunday, mostly cloudy, high 43. Monday, chance for snow early, then mixing with rain late, high 38. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Back to the KODY studio for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's Rick Windham.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Outdoor Connection and the Stump the Chump version with T.J. Harding and I here. T.J. has the mental bucket here in town, and if you need anything for your hunting and fishing adventure, stop in there and see T.J.
That's right.
Speaking of which, deer season is right around the corner, so
I'll tell you what, we
get
to
run.
We've got all kinds of stuff going on. We've got pheasant season starting tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
You know, general pheasant season. I do have some pheasant shells at the shop.
Holy smokes, let me write that down.
Yeah, write it down in bold because it ain't going to last long.
any 16-gauge bird
shot? I don't have any 16-gauge anything. I did get a couple cases of pheasant loads yesterday. I have
12, I'm assuming?
Yep, 12-gauge. No 20, no 410, no 16, all 12. I did get a whole bunch of Federal Top Gun 8-shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, 2.5 months later after dove season started.
Right.
But I do have some, and these early season pheasants, sometimes they can be taken with a light load.
If you got a good dog and the birds are sitting tight, 8's not a bad
right.
shot to use.
And other than that, excuse me, we've got deer seasons coming right up. You know, a lot of people look forward to the rifle seasons. You know, we've had archery's been going for a couple months, but next weekend mm-hmm. is the first rifle season. That special landowner tag
right.
that Game and Parks is allowing this year. And those of you that don't understand what that is, it basically goes off of qualifying landowners and their immediate family members are eligible to have a 3-day tag good for the weekend and the Monday before
the regular
rifle season. But it's only good for those 3 days, and it does count towards your 2 total tags that allow you to shoot a buck. So if you get one of those tags and a regular tag, you can't go get a muzzleloader tag, you know. So basically, it still counts as one of your 2 buck tags. But my kids got those tags
okay.
this year, so we're going to go out next weekend, and it'll be kind of like their own little time. You know, we
there
can focus
go.
On them. We don't have to worry about anybody else driving around or the neighbors,
hopefully.
Or road hunters. Yeah, so. Well, we'll get that done, and we're looking forward to that. They've got their rifles sighted in, and they're ready to go. So.
What did they use?
Donna, it's her first year. She's 10, and she's going to use my 350 Legend.
That's not too much for her?
Nope. Built it on an AR platform.
Okay.
And all the 350 Legend is
well, like, that would make sense. It's going to take up a lot of... 350 Legend is not that...
No, it sounds
horrendous
big.
Around.
Right.
But,
all that is a 223 casing that they straightened out and put a 35 caliber bullet into
right.
it. And, you know, I figure it's a 150-yard gun, 200 if she had to. You know, she shot her 410 before. She got a little Mossberg pump 410. And she was scared. You know, she said, I don't want to shoot. It's going to kick. I'm like, just, you're fine. You know, I'll help you. So I just kind of put my hand over the end of the fore end, you know, so it wouldn't jump up or anything like that. I just wanted her to hit the target. First time she'd ever shot that gun at 100 yards. And I know this is radio, so you can't see my hand gestures. So we got the bullseye, and the first shot was right beneath the bullseye.
About number 6 on the outside
yeah,
ring?
You know, and I wanted her to hit an 18-inch target
yeah.
just to find a bullet hole.
She's ready.
So, yeah, she's like, well, that didn't kick at all. So then she shot it again. The second shot was just the right of the bullseye. So I said, you're good to go, kid.
That's good.
And then Morgan, this will be her third season, and she's going to use my 22-250 this year that I've got loaded with a 60-grain nozzle partition.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Years ago, I used to think that even though it was legal by the energy standards, a 22-250 might have been too light for whitetail. And
yep.
then I followed 3 guys through their season, all using 22-250s. That's a heck of a round.
It is. You know, and it's all about, you know, 30 years ago, the bullets may not have been up to par with what we've got now. You
right.
know, you look at the... Oh, they've got the AccuBond, they have the nozzle partition. I mean, there's a lot of heavily built 22 caliber bullets that don't just come apart, you know, like they do
right.
in the varmints and stuff. So, I mean, with a 60-grain partition, if she wants to put one through the shoulder at a couple hundred yards, it'd probably do
it'd
the trick.
Do yeah. Now, these guys that shot theirs, 2 of them, and they were nice-sized bucks, they collapsed right where they were standing.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, which was the biggest buck of the bunch, he took one step forward and then cratered.
Yeah.
Yep. And I've hit deer with, you know, 30-odd sixes that have run for 150 yards.
I've shot deer 338 Win Mags that run for over
yeah.
100 yards. You know, some
so.
You think, man, that's really going to be the next Kurt Wappen down the go, and it's almost too much.
Yeah. It's, well, good for them. Hope
yeah.
they're successful.
Oh, yeah.
What else you got in new for the hunting season?
I'll tell you what, you know, the rifle thing, I've got a whole rack full of deer rifles, you know, and I think this weekend and next we're going to sell a whole bunch of deer rifles. You know, it's that time of year, and I do have some ammo saved back.
It's actually a little late to be buying.
It would be, but I've got a bunch of them, so we'll see if we can get some of them moved here in the next few days. And I do have some ammo for them as well. I think that might be why some people are hesitant to buy anything new right now, because they're afraid they won't be able to get ammo for it. I try to keep at least one box back for every caliber of rifle that I have. So if you buy something, you're probably going to get some ammo to go play with it right away.
Good.
Shotgun-wise, I do have a few shotguns. I sold a couple yesterday. I do have more coming next week. I've got a couple Weatherby Elements coming in. I think I might have another pump action coming in, too. Otherwise, just your standard hunt stuff. I've got rattling antlers, deer scent, you know, the rut scent, rutting buck,
right.
Ester scent. I've got Evercom by Conquest. Sandbags, field dressing gloves. Got a whole bunch of knives in. I mean, if you're looking for anything, you can probably find it over there.
Optics.
Right, yes, sir. I've got a ton of optics in right now. I've got rifle scopes, binoculars, rangefinders, spotting scopes. I've got the window mounts for the spotting scopes
right. For
your vehicle.
That really helps.
It helps a lot. Shooting sticks, I have, you know, like Harris-style bipods,
okay.
Caldwell bipods. Primo's trigger sticks is kind of my new favorite thing to use. I really enjoy those trigger sticks. They're pretty slick. Archery stuff, I have a ton of broadheads in yet. Still got a couple crossbows, accessories for bows and crossbows. I've got several compound bows in stock yet, used ones, you know, that people have brought in and traded and whatnot. So a lot of good stuff down there.
Yeah, you do. It amazes me when I walk through and look how much stuff you can get in the size of that building.
I learned that from Cabela's. You know, one of my old GMs always used to tell us, you can't sell space, so make something happen. You just fill that space instead of selling air. So
yep.
So you find a way to fit it in there. It's almost like putting a big jigsaw puzzle together.
This is a tough time of year for an outdoorsman because you don't know whether to grab a rifle, shotgun, or a fishing rod when you leave the house.
Yeah, and that's something that I never really did growing up was fall fishing. You know, as soon as the deer seasons and the hunting season started, we never really fished until the ice got thick enough. But there's a lot of fall fishermen around here.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them. And here lately, it's been a little slow, I guess. The wipers are kind of starting to pick up a little bit again. I've heard a few reports of some walleyes in the canals and stuff. I think it's just a matter of time, and some of that stuff will start picking up a little bit more the colder we get.
Oh, yeah. And fall is probably the best time of year to catch that big trophy fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I've heard.
And Mark Sexton, who's with Berkeley, it comes down and fishes with me occasionally. That's one of his favorite things is fall fishing. He said the rule of thumb is to go bigger.
Yeah,
bigger lures
and
faster retrieve. He said there's a tremendous competition under the surface, and he said the big guy, it generally wins out,
and
that means he's the one coming after the bait.
Yep, I've heard that from several people, and like I said, I've never done the fall fishing thing, so I'm not an expert on that like I am some other things, but they said the bigger the bait, the better off you're going to be.
Yep.
They're trying to fill their feed bags right now.
They want the maximum amount of return on the energy they expend.
Absolutely.
So that's right. I hear the music again.
You must be kicking me out of here again.
Yep, it's time. We're done. So thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you bet.
Wish we'd have had a call in, but we had plenty to talk about.
Everybody's probably just bamboozled by all my success, I'm sure.
There you go, yeah. And their humbleness as well.
Well, yeah. You know.
Anyway, that's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.